Hey, y'all, and welcome to Ain't No Such Thing, where we tell original Southern horror stories. We also talk about cryptids, legends, and haunts. And we're actually going to go a little bit north today for our urban legend. And we're going to talk about the Melon Heads.
That ain't the South.
I know.
But we like to venture sometimes.
Just because y'all are from Indiana doesn't mean we have to violate our mission of telling stories from the South.
Okay, but they're not from Indiana, or so I'm told.
What's north of Indiana?
Ah, dang it.
What's east of Indiana?
Come on.
But yes, we'll talk about the Melon Heads.
Well, first, let's chat. What we have going on this week?
Well, I wanted to talk for a minute about a real life horror that Jess and I experienced this week. Labor Day traffic.
Bum, bum, bum.
Now, you are the ones that chose to go away on Labor Day weekend.
We did not choose the destination. We were very happy to go to Gatlinburg for Labor Day weekend.
We were, yes, for family sort of reunion for my more immediate family. And there was a horror in that as well. Not necessarily the family. But the place that we got, y'all, believe it or not, it was a beautiful place. It was 8 bedrooms.
This massive log cabin just designed to hold 30-something people.
Yes, gorgeous. But it happened to have a cockroach infestation.
In the kitchen.
And it was really terrible. So, consolation prize was really great. The next house that we ended up was how many bedrooms?
20 bedrooms.
With, by the way, a theater room with a hobbit door.
It was actually the only property available to rent in Gatlinburg we could find that would hold all of us, and then it would have held 3 times as many.
It
as
said
we
it,
actually traveled.
It slept 96 people.
That's crazy. But it was great.
I don't know 96 people.
I don't want to know 96 people.
That's our next Ain't No Such Thing convention.
We'll try to make that happen. I think the scariest thing that actually happened was at the first house there was a toaster.
Oh my goodness.
Your sister was going to fix some toast for her son.
Yes.
And she banged on the toaster and roaches scattered
just
from
everywhere,
inside the
everywhere.
Toaster everywhere.
And y'all, it's not the big ones, so don't get too crazy. But we're talking about the small ones that it is a problem.
That's
like when
worse.
It was bad.
But it was seriously something out of a Cronenberg film.
I'd have been sleeping in the car.
It was wild. We did stay there one night because we didn't have an option.
Yeah. But we were out of there afterwards, and I thought my dad was going to kill somebody. But it was a great time after that. Like I said, we went to the mansion and hung out and got to, you know, spend time with family. So it was a good overall experience. And then the traffic happened. So, what were y'all up to?
We hung out here, tried to stay out of the traffic as much as we could. We went and had a good dinner with my mom and my auntie, who was celebrating a birthday. And then we went to an escape room.
Yes, we did. And we did not escape this time.
Barely, though.
Barely, yes.
What was the theme?
It was Meltdown, where you had to prevent a meltdown at a nuclear plant.
That's very topical right
it
now.
Really
it
is.
Yeah, it was actually very different in terms of the puzzles from the other escape rooms that we've done as well. There was a lot more that was focused on mathematics, enough to where we had a calculator and there was chemistry, minor chemistry involved. Yeah,
goodness.
Geography. So,
give me puzzles.
We got to the last one and we couldn't
do
it.
I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah, it's like that was the end. So we just let the world end.
Configurations. Turning covalent bonds and things.
It's like I did not mean to go back to school for this escape room.
It was fun, though.
It was fun, though. That means we had done all of the rooms at that location. And then, unfortunately, they let us know that that one was shutting down. So it was the last weekend that the place was there. And we hope that they'll get a new location and be back.
Yeah.
Hopefully near closer us. To the interstate and closer to us.
Ooh. Yes, please.
Well, at least they realize after the Ain't No Such Thing cruise done all the rooms, it's not worth staying open.
That's right.
Shut this down.
Well, coming up this week, we're traveling pretty much most of September and October, somewhere or another. And coming up this Friday, Erica, Amanda, and I are going to Little Rock, Arkansas for the Arkansas Comic Con, mostly in our capacity as comic creators. As most of you probably know, we make horror comics. And we're going up there for our first con in quite a little while and one of the last ones for 2022.
Yeah, yeah.
And my first time at Arkansas Comic Con as well.
It was a really fun show last year. It was a heavy, heavy crowd.
Yeah.
Those people were really hungry for comics. We sold a bunch of comics in there last year.
We did. Nice folks. Ready to see it again. There's some pretty country out there, too.
Yeah, we'll be handing out Ain't No Such Thing cards to get people to the podcast and just having a good time. It'll be good to see some old friends again.
Woo!
On this past week, we released our first original short story in over a year.
Yay!
Yeah. And it's gotten a really good reception. Downloads have been really brisk so far. And this story was called Bitten. It's written by Erica, narrated by Amanda.
Yeah, it freaked me out so bad that I didn't read stories for a long time. No, it was actually a good little gruesome tale. I felt like the Crypt Keeper introducing that one, though.
It's a body horror story, and it was spawned from a phobia or a fear that Amanda has and has talked about with me once or twice, and my mind just ran with it. So I really dove in and enjoyed focusing on this particular little critter.
Part of my fear is teeth that are too big. Or, whatever that means.
She has very specific weird fears that are awesome to let roll.
Very inspiring in terms of
absolutely.
Content creation. Well, I love the pacing of that story and the way the attitude of the protagonist kind of drives how you feel about what's happening. Leads you right up to this precipice of emotion that really messes with your head a few different times in the story. It's a really great build.
It reminded me, speaking of Tales from the Crypt, it reminded me a little bit of Creepshow. It's the one with Stephen King. Is it? It Grows on You.
I had the exact same thought.
Or The Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill. That's what it is. That's a great.
I will take that comparison. Yeah. All right. I'll run with that too.
All right.
Well, I guess the best way to show love is to kind of feed off, the person that you love's phobia. So,
do check that one out. And a lot of Erica's one-off stories throughout Ain't No Such Thing are gruesome little slice of life. Ha ha ha.
Pastoral tales, as I told her the other day.
And so on to the stars of this week's show.
But before we get into the melon heads, let's talk about what actually sort of underlies this myth from the upper Midwest. And it's a real medical condition called hydrocephalus, which happens when the cerebrospinal fluid around the brain is produced in excess to the point that the bloodstream can't absorb it. So it just builds and builds and builds in the space between the meninges, the tissues around the brain, and the brain itself. And it causes that skin to expand. It expands the skull and can cause pressure that can cause brain damage and other problems related to brain pressure. And it's treated now as it was been treated for decades with a shunt just to remove the fluid from the ventricles, the hollow parts of the brain. It's a very straightforward procedure. It's easily treated when it's diagnosed. It can be touch and go in certain cases. But people who have hydrocephalus are not necessarily any different than anybody else cognitively or emotionally, but hydrocephalus has sort of fueled this melon heads myth over the decades, and it really has nothing to do with aggressive behavior or bizarre behavior or substandard intelligence or anything else, if it's caught in time. And something I learned researching for this episode is that it doesn't just happen in babies or children. It can happen in people over 60 as well.
Is there a specific cause for that to happen in older people?
It can be from injury or disease, but I did not see any specific examples of what might happen. It just seems to be random when they have some sort of brain injury, like a subdural hematoma or brain hemorrhage.
And of course, I was very curious to see a picture of it, and I just didn't really find any adult pictures. I saw a lot of children from like third world countries that maybe didn't get access to the care that they needed.
Right.
But adult-wise, I did not really see, except for ones that were like looking from like the 1800s. I don't know if they're real or not.
And it is rare, but it does happen. But as we go through talking about the melon heads, I just wanted to be sure that our listeners had an understanding of what hydrocephalus really is, and that it's a very treatable, very rare condition. But in modern times, it's diagnosed quickly, it's treated quickly, and it just doesn't turn into what it would have even 50, 60 years ago.
And can you tell that Kevin went to medical school about now? Really? That's a lot of information, but it's very good.
I just pay attention. I actually did observe a few cases as a child because my mom was a nurse, and just hanging around hospitals in the 70s, things were different. She would have to go pick up a physical check, and so I would have to go with her as a single parent. And she would point things out and educate me about them. So I didn't have these same biases or misunderstandings about these conditions because my mom told me what it actually was. So you know, it's nice to have that clarity. And we want everybody to have that clarity because we're going to talk about some really crazy monster stories here that may be based on hydrocephalus but really have nothing to do with it. And,
right.
And we're just going to leave that part behind and talk about some other reasons that people might have been afraid of these mythological, probably non-existent creatures with bulbous heads that they call the melon heads.
Well, I think, honestly, I think the real horror is how maybe they've got it in some instances with some of the stories that we have coming up.
Yeah, and that goes back to something we talked about a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the Casket Girls, where monster stories are too often fueled by ignorance and bias against people who are disadvantaged in some way. And people with hydrocephalus are definitely disadvantaged. The difference being in 2022, the diagnostic services and the treatments can be applied so quickly that the damage doesn't happen like it would have, like I said, even 50, 60 years ago. So, and we'll talk about that, but we do want to make the episode fun. So we get the educational part out of the way, and then we'll talk about this. And there are some really wild, really funny stories about sightings and things like that. And we want to enjoy that without harming anybody's feelings or making anyone feel that we're being insensitive, because we're not.
Right.
But we do want to talk about these stories, frankly, and some of them get pretty out there. And I do have some other ideas about why these stories about large-headed little people might be concerning, and we'll talk about that too.
Oh, my. So the three states in which we found the most predominant stories of this legend are Michigan, Ohio, and Connecticut.
Where did Connecticut come from? Like, I can see Michigan and Ohio, but then all the way over to Connecticut.
There's lots of woods up there.
But how are they tied?
Just one family running around, like, you know, having some fun.
It's funny when you read about the different legends between the three states, it's almost like three different offshoots, as Erica pointed out, of the same family, or three different breeds of
variations.
But the stories have some commonalities that we'll talk about. But first, let's talk about the differences.
So of the three places, let's start with Ohio. Now, the scariest thing in Ohio is they're chilly.
That's the damn truth.
I'm sorry, not sorry, Ohio. That's watery.
You put your watery ass chili on some rubbery noodles and call it chili.
Yeah, it kind of looks like Manwich with too much water. Y'all, that's gross.
The only reason I went to Ohio was the roller coasters. All right. That's it.
But so in Ohio, a Dr. Crow features prominently in these legends, but there's two major stories. The first one being that Dr. Crow was a mad scientist, and he collected these orphans and did experiments on him. And the orphans ended up burning down his house with him and his wife in it. And they took to the woods. And they live out there aggressively protecting their territory and breeding with each other. The second one being that Dr. Crow and his wife, they actually cared for the children after the government experimented on them. And the fire was not intentional. They were just left to their own devices after he and his wife were killed in the fire, and some of the other children were.
And I heard a little bit different version was that the wife became very protective of the children. They were being called like the melon heads and big heads and things, the wobble heads.
Yeah. Yes.
And so she became very protective. And then one day she did end up dying and they were just so distraught and so upset that they caused, you know, some damage in the house. It ended up burning up. And yeah, both they died as well as, you know, Dr. Crow died, and they are still roaming as ghosts in the woods.
Yes, I heard that too.
Now, Ohio, in the research that I did, I found they have a connection to a topic that we covered very early on in Ain't No Such Thing.
And that was that some of the melon heads, was this for with the benevolent Dr. Crow or the evil Dr. Crow? I think it was the evil Dr. Crow version, that the melon heads, after they killed him and cannibalized him, that they then went to live under a crybaby bridge in Ohio. And we established before, we talked about Crybaby Bridge, that there's basically one or two in every state in the union.
This is true.
I thought that, well, the story that I read is when their ghosts were roaming in, you know, the forest and stuff after, you know, they died in the fire, that they ended up going to the Crybaby Bridge and you can hear them cry.
That sounds more like a Crybaby Bridge legend that we're familiar with.
Right.
For sure. I mean, there were Crybaby Bridge legends about the goat man in Delaware or Rhode Island or wherever it was that lived under Crybaby. So there's really no consistency. But the ones that are consistent have to do with some betrayed children or babies that cry in the night under the bridge.
Poor things.
So moving on to Michigan. Jess, what did you find out about Michigan?
Ooh, girl, Michigan, I tell you what. So I found it very interesting that they did focus on what they call the Felt Mansion. You could actually look this up. There is a legit Felt Mansion, feltmansion.org. I found an events venue. So you can have weddings there and parties if you like. It doesn't really ever mention anything about, you know, Dr. Crow or anything. I haven't read the history about, you know, Mr. Felt, and he was a manufacturer and stuff and made some things and stuff. But, you know, the weird thing is his wife did end up dying, 6 weeks and when they first moved in. So they say it's haunted because of her. She kind of roams the halls and things like that. However, this place also became a church prep school for boys and also a prison. So if you want to have a wedding that used to be a prison.
Hey, I've got an idea.
I heard it's haunted by a dismembered doctor who experimented on children.
Tell us about it.
Well, yeah, what I found was that it was near a hospital that was treating hydrocephalic kids. And they shut the hospital down and just turned them loose into the woods, and they found their way to this mansion. As you do, yeah.
Or they escaped.
But the other part of it was that they live in caves under an abandoned zoo that's also nearby. So it's like Gotham City over here, where they go from the asylum to the prison to the abandoned zoo and found a hideout.
All I can see is the penguin.
And they work for the penguin.
We love the penguin.
The Danny DeVito version.
No, no, no.
I love the penguin.
He was in my nightmares as a child.
He was a great penguin.
In my nightmares. And so what did they do? The kids? What did they do to the doctor?
Oh, apparently they dismembered him and hid his body parts all along the grounds and in the rooms and in closets and under floorboards.
So that'd be nice. You can have your wedding and open the door and look, there's a foot.
So is this the guy the Scientologists are trying to put back together? They're trying to find all his body parts. Is it the same guy?
Don't get us in trouble with Scientology.
Mm-hmm. It's like, this is the one story variation where they aren't eating the body parts. So, you know.
Oh, no.
It's the whole thing. We'll get to that.
And then there's Connecticut,
where they're very aggressive. What I found on Connecticut, there was no benevolent variation. This one, the children who were being experimented on burned down their asylum, and 10 to 20 of them survived and went out to the woods where they lived, and they were cannibals. They would catch people, and that is supposedly the reason that their heads grew the way they did.
That and inbreeding.
Good
times.
Like, Connecticut is the one that has the connection to all the colonial witchcraft, though, as well. Probably because of where it is.
But those witches. I tell you what.
They're always up to something.
Right? You know.
Gotta so get your kicks.
They're either hexed or inbred or
cannibalism.
Ravenous.
Yep.
Which are basically people's attribution for anything bad or misunderstood.
It's a devil.
It's witchcraft. It's inbreeding. It's, you know, you go, those are your fallbacks for anything you don't understand.
Yeah, that's mainly what I saw too, as far as most involved, like a hospital or an insane asylum. It either closing and they just kind of started roaming the woods and they all they had were like small little animals, and then they ended up having to, you know, cannibalize hikers and things of that nature. But I did want to go back really quick to Michigan, because there was the one urban legend about the nuclear scientists. I know, oh, Erica, yes. You know, yes, about this.
But I'm not going to get into it.
Oh, okay.
You are.
Well, so from what the story kind of told was that I think it was a group of kids, and y'all, I'm not perfect at telling stories by any means, and I don't know the full details, but that they found this nuclear – well, they saw this guy with a very large head, and they followed him into the woods and ended up – like at a log cabin with some of his family, and the guy told him that he was a nuclear scientist back in World War II, and he was like exposed to some of the radiation, yada yada yada, and now his head is huge, his family's huge, and voila. And they got in trouble by the police because the police were trying to cover it up, and because they tried to go back to see them again and stuff, and police were like, you don't know what you're talking about, there's no such thing, and they think the police was all involved.
And a variant off of that was actually that there was a mad scientist who was actively inserting fluids into these people's heads in order to create these melon heads out in the woods of his own. So,
see, there's always more to the story.
Like, there's always more. There's always a mad scientist, a crazy doctor. But
okay, yeah, but let's
it went back to cannibalism with that.
But, I mean, okay, let's talk about the fact that all these sightings and everything, did one sighting or one story that you guys heard was actually somebody, like, attacking or, like, cannibalizing or, like,
here's
trying
to? Here's my favorite one. There's an account from a guy named Tony. Hey, yo, it's me, Tony. I saw some melon heads. Tony was driving. Now, the ones that I read all involve cars. Apparently, the melon heads are real... you know, car junkies. They like to get up under the hood.
They probably don't get to experience cars much in the woods, honey.
These really made me laugh.
They just want to be gearheads.
So, hey, yo, Tony was driving his car, driving around with his buddies to find melon heads. This is what he was out to do, and he did. Imagine that, because this is what these guys did. They didn't have a Dairy Queen in their town, apparently, to go hang out at. So Tony and the boys are out driving, and they come up to an irrigation canal. We call them ditches here in the South. It's a ditch.
It's a ditch.
And they pulled up beside a ditch, and he looked over, and he said there was a guy with a big head and glowing eyes standing on the other side of the ditch. And they got scared. They found what they were looking for. So he hauls ass, punches the gas, and is driving away at 45. Where I come from, hauling ass ain't 45 miles an hour. I got news for you. That's the slow lane.
It's 55.
No, that was in the 80s.
Oh, sorry.
That's when I got my driver's license. But he said he looked over, and the melon head was running as fast as the car at 45 or 50 miles per hour. Now, that's the first account of a melon head having super speed.
No, that's Terminator 2, baby.
Have you seen this boy?
Oh, my goodness.
That was my favorite melon head story that actually involved a visual account. And it was in some weird Tales of the Midwest book or something like that.
I just want him to knock on the window and go, pardon me, do you have any Grey Poupon? It was in the 80s.
You read the story about Debbie and her car?
Good old Debbie.
You want to regale us with that one?
Not really. I feel terrible for the Melonheads, honestly.
So Debbie, who I'm going to guess is either a descendant or ancestor of Tony, depending on when Tony... when Tony was out there, because Debbie's car incident happened in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Tony's did not have a definite time frame, but I'm assuming it was in a, you know, in that era of the 80s.
They probably were together. Let's just be honest.
I'm just going to figure they were a divorced crackhead couple. It's like... So Debbie and her friends were looking for melon heads. It's a very common activity. Imagine that they saw a melon head when they were looking for a melon head. Hmm. So they got out of their car near where the old insane asylum was supposed to be in Ohio.
As you do.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about asylum since I actually worked at one for 16 years. We're going to dispel some myths here in a minute. So Debbie, not Tony, Debbie got out of her car. Now, people that leave their keys in their car get what they deserve, in my opinion. And Debbie left her keys in the car, and she and her friends are walking toward the site of the abandoned, collapsed insane asylum where the cannibalistic melon heads live. Suddenly, her car comes on, the lights come on, and the car comes barreling toward them, and they see melon heads driving the car. The melon heads stole her damn car and then tried to run her over with their own car. And in my headcanon, the melon heads are all flipping them off.
Wait. Breaking the law.
If they're playing priest, they're better friends to me than Debbie could ever be.
I'd hang with them. I don't know that I could steal somebody's car, but I'll laugh at them.
And honestly, I just picture them going to a Circle K and getting nachos like Beavis and Butthead.
Right. Con polio.
They have big, giant heads.
They do. These things happen in pop culture. We're going to talk about it.
This is true. Oh, Debbie.
But those are the two main accounts that I saw. They're, of course, very ambiguous accounts of teenagers going to the old... the felt mansion and seeing ghost shadows of big heads and things like that. They don't understand physics and how, you know, light can make heads look bigger than bodies. I explained this to my 8-year-old last week, but they don't get it.
Or the hikers that are going out in the woods and they see mutilated little animals and they're like, oh, well, the melon heads obviously did this. Yeah.
So we'll have to put those into the category of, I seen it. Yeah.
Which is a category we use quite often. Oh, that's yeah. like a fat folder and they know such thing, a file cabinet.
But is there any photographic evidence?
I couldn't find a picture.
Not one?
No.
Not one that wasn't Photoshop.
I didn't even see a Photoshop.
I saw a few.
There are two apparent fan films about the melon heads.
Yes.
There's one on YouTube called The Melon Heads.
The Melon Heads.
And you said you watched 5 seconds of it? Or?
Pretty much. It kind of starts out as kind of like the Twilight Zone where some guy comes on and is like, let me tell you about this. And then I kind of fast forwarded a little bit because I was bored. And it's some girl trying to explain something, but she kept looking down. She wasn't even looking at the camera. So, and it's sepia, by the way. Is that how you say it?
Are you trying to say that this is a movie that Amanda and I should be watching?
Yeah, you would love.
Okay. All right. I feel like I'm going to watch this because the other night, Erica and I watched a Neil Breen film, so it can only go up from here.
Well, and the second one was The Legends of the Melon Heads, which I think was a 2011 film, at least IMDb says so. And I couldn't find it anywhere. So I don't know if it didn't work out or...
Still in pre-production?
Yeah, maybe. 2011, man.
Well, looks like I have work to do.
You do.
Well, let's talk about the common aspects of these myths and kind of break it down here as we move toward talking a little bit about where this may have originated outside of hydrocephalus and misunderstandings there. So most of these stories from all three states involve inbreeding, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is something that idiots talk about regarding lots of areas of the country, but mostly the South. And so
Appalachian.
It's a total lie. Mad scientists, which seems like something out of the 50s, right? Have there been mad scientist rumors since the 50s besides Fauci?
I mean, my kid wanted to be one for several years, so.
I wanted to be one for
their aspirations.
It's to hold all that big brain.
Well, hold on now. You're getting into derogatory territory.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're going to talk about that part too.
Okay. Getting excited.
Asylums. And let me tell you. Jess and I met at an asylum. We were not patients. She worked there for a few months. I worked there for 16 years. And never, even in the dark ages of the 1960s and earlier, because those were the dark ages of psychiatric care, inpatient psychiatric care, would they take somebody with hydrocephalus into a psychiatric hospital. No. They don't have mental illness.
It's medical.
They don't even have the behavioral issues that would get somebody in there, like lunacy, which is basically menstrual-related problems, a PMS, things like that that they would put women in there for during those times and earlier. It's not even something that would fall in that category. It just wouldn't happen. Even talking about somebody with hydrocephalus or melonheads being in a quote-unquote insane asylum wouldn't even make sense going back to the 1800s.
But isn't it something, because I thought a lot of times with the asylums and stuff, they threw them in there when they didn't understand or didn't know.
But so this is something they have understood for a long time.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it's like I said, the treatment has essentially been the same for many decades, going back into the mid and early 20th century. Mm. Yeah, this is not one of those that where it was like bipolar disorder with a term manic depression back in the day that they didn't understand or know how to treat, except with lithium, they accidentally discovered that at some point. So they didn't have an option but to put those people there. Or if somebody was having wild PMS that they couldn't control for a few days a month. Seriously, that was a real thing. Lunacy. Mm-hmm. They put them in Searcy. That was the hospital I worked at. Which, by the way, closed, and the only thing being cited up there are YouTubers.
It's creepy, y'all.
Cannibalism. That was another commonality. And if you want to marginalize somebody, just say that they eat human flesh. If you really want to attribute some bad emotion to a group of people, just say, well, they just eat people.
The hills have eyes.
Yes. Back to nature. Escaping into the woods. They all escaped and hide in the woods because the woods are scary, right? They're scary, dark, and deep. They get out there and they're not sure what to expect. My Crybaby Ridge experience here in Alabama was very much like that. You walk out there, you don't know what you're going to see. And so it's creepy. And preying on interloping humans ties into the cannibalism and back to nature aspect. So you're always at risk because you don't know what's out there. The melonheads, they run as fast as cars. Just ask Tony. And they're going to get you. So there's always a threat, of an invisible threat.
And I've got to say, it seems to me like a commentary on how people view themselves when we're saying that being feral and going back to that feral basis of who we are sends us back to these cannibalistic inbreeding ways. And like, what are we actually saying about humanity if that's like the base level of where we all think that we're going to land? Or when
we're
creating
these
stories.
I think it might be the scariest, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like something out of the collective unconscious, really.
Right, yeah. Right.
Like archetypes like the Joker and things like that, that everybody has some understanding of whether they call it that or not.
Right.
Which is the Joker, Loki, the devil. You can just go through all those things that are basically the same crate. It's the same person.
All I know is if I knew somebody that was a cannibal, I would never, ever be able to trust them because, you know, what's to say? They won't just turn around and eat you one night.
That's a very profound statement.
You've thought a lot about this.
It's like, this is my buddy Shane. He eats human flesh. He's coming over for dinner tonight. No, he's not.
Like, what happens when they get hungry?
Well, no melonheads are coming over for dinner if they eat flesh.
Hell no.
Even if they stole that car and were listening to Motley Crue. So I was putting together our outline for this episode after we had kind of discussed it amongst ourselves at different points. And it occurred to me that the big head phenomenon, this enlarged brain phenomenon, doesn't necessarily have to just be confined to some bias related to hydrocephalus. If you look back, especially in the 1960s and earlier, even into the 1970s to some extent, in pop culture, there are lots of examples of small, big-headed people, creatures, that are threats to normal humans. And Eric will get this one. Star Trek, The Cage and the Menagerie, those episodes feature the Talosians, mm-hmm. who just have big butt heads.
Wait, what?
They have big heads that like butts.
they're
big
tall
butt heads in a
kingdom. They're very, very lumpy, unattractive butts, but they're butts nonetheless.
He's right, though. This time he's right.
Okay.
Once in an episode, I was right.
Here's your gold star.
Gold star. But the Talosians were able to control the crew of the Enterprise in different eras. Mm-hmm.
With their butts.
With their butt heads.
And back to
they never showed what they did with their butts, but with their heads. We don't know what the Tolosian butt culture was like.
We don't know what their butts actually looked like.
They look like foreheads.
Like a, I have an idea.
You just don't know.
Just a random aside. I'm really horrified because I'm hearing butthead and shunt too much together, and it makes me think of the movie Society, and now I'm scared. I'm dying inside.
I'm so glad I showed that to you.
Is that one of those movies that y'all watch
again? I showed you that butthead picture.
Oh, no.
We're just going to let you Google that one on your own.
Do it.
I will have my revenge.
We'll see.
So you can see there was a cultural sort of thread involving people with bulbous large heads that could control regular people.
I think it was the intelligence factor, too. I mean, knew the focus there was on the mind and the idea that these alien entities could be coming to Earth, but also being of a greater intelligence. I think that was the source of a lot of fear during the 1950s in particular.
Yeah, and you take that one step closer to home from Star Trek to the Twilight Zone, the masterful Twilight Zone. I think if you listen to Eric and I's stories, you can see the direct influence that we're always trying to strive for, that Twilight Zone vibe. But there was an episode called To Serve Man,
one of the all-time greats.
Bulbous butt-headed aliens.
What in the world is up with all the butts?
All played by Richard Kiel, by the way, who was Jaws in the James Bond movies at 25 years old.
Wait, hold on. I thought you were going to say the shark. I was like, hold on. Bruce?
In the Roger Moore James Bond movies, where they are able to control people. They're super intelligent. And what are they? They're cannibals. Mm-hmm. They're here to eat people. Mm-hmm. And it's called To Serve Man, which is off of that old, was it Robert Louis Stevenson that wrote that essay on To Serve Man, where he suggested that the rich should eat the poor because of the hunger problems? And it irony, I think.
I believe you're right.
Was it Stevenson? Who wrote Gulliver's Travels?
I thought it was...
It was whoever wrote Gulliver's Travels.
Wasn't it whoever wrote Candide?
Anyway. It's named after that same essay.
Oh, okay.
And the parallels... Once I got to thinking about To Serve Man.
Voltaire.
I don't think so.
No.
Jonathan Swift.
Jonathan Swift. Oh, yes. Okay. Gulliver's Travels. I got that part.
Google.
Right. Thank you. But the parallels between that episode of The Twilight Zone and the Melonheads were pretty stark to me once I sat down and thought about it for a minute. And The Twilight Zone has that effect. It's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Taking it further than that, those are both aliens, but more commonly, gray aliens and green Martians. Just go watch Mars Attacks, Tim Burton's masterful Mars Attack. Bulbous-headed aliens murdering and eating people. Encounters of the Third Kind. One of our personal favorite movies shot right here. The house, one of those houses is stone's throw from where we live.
Communion's the one that terrifies me, and it has since childhood. And that is one of the very few movies that I can say is very scary to me for indescribable reasons. Mm-hmm. There's a sequence in there with a gray alien peeking out from around an armoire, and I had an armoire in my room when I was a kid, and I was so terrified of that. And still to this day, almost 30 years later, seeing those particular gray aliens scares the crap out of me.
You don't have an armoire anymore, do you?
I do not. It is gone, long, long gone, and I will never again.
I don't blame you. That sounds terrifying.
My close friend of mine from my previous job and from high school actually played one of the gray aliens in Close Encounters of the Third Kind as a child here. Mm-hmm. I know several people actually that appeared in that film. And again, those aliens were apparently here on a peaceful mission, but you don't know that until the end. And people are freaking out about those aliens throughout the movie and what their intent could be. Spielberg took a much more realistic approach in that movie than these other movies. But it just illustrates how this archetypal sort of physical build touches on something primal in people that's scary. And it doesn't have to necessarily involve hydrocephalus, but I think that's something that got wrapped into this superstition and into this legend over time, because it was something real that they could see, that they could attach to it, based on ignorance, not knowing that That is a very isolated medical problem that doesn't affect other things unless it goes unchecked, which in the United States, it really shouldn't and hasn't for many decades. So I just want to point that out. Agree, disagree?
Absolutely.
I agree.
Well, I think we've exhausted this topic. I think we've kind of identified where it comes from, that it's probably not real on any level.
Yeah.
To a sense. Yeah, I mean, you know. Anyways, we'll get to our ratings.
Okay, we'll talk about that. So let's go around the table. We'll start with you, Jess. Believability.
Why do you start with me? This is the second time you started with me.
Clockwise.
I'm not sitting on this side anymore. So believability, in my opinion. Well, yes, I do believe that there are people out there that have rather large heads due to that. But it's treatable. I do not think they're hanging out in the woods running around scaring everybody.
We're talking about believability of the legend. Obviously, there's a real medical condition. Okay. I didn't expect you to denounce the medical condition.
Well, I was just saying.
It's a lie. It's a communist plot.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, they were doing some testing, so you don't. Now, okay. So I think, no. I mean, if I think more about it, I do not think that they're running around in the woods and like trying to scare people. And again, I keep coming back to the fact that they're not really doing anything. They're just like hanging out. And then these people see them and they're like, ah! So like, I think that's really unfair. But anyways.
Well, if they were real, what would their threat level be? You can be a high threat to people, a low threat to people.
Well, okay, I don't really like the idea of cannibalism unless you're Hans Mikkelsen. Is that how you say his last name?
Mads Mikkelsen.
That's him. Anyways.
Please don't cut that from the final edit.
Anyways. Hans, Mads. He's beautiful. Anyways.
Dina Denzel.
Adele.
Daddy.
Wickedly talented.
Anyways, I really like him, so I don't like, but I don't like the idea of cannibalism, period. Where were they at? Oh, threat level.
You're at Hans Mikkelsen.
You know, the sad thing is, I actually looked his name up before I did this. Oh, God. I just think he's pretty, okay?
But Hans Mikkelsen, he's a handsome devil.
But he's a high threat level, I'm just going to tell you. But no, I don't think they're threatening because they're just standing there every time. Like, there's no proof that they've actually hurt anybody or anything of that nature. And they're really just wanting my car. So I think if there's any threat, it's just that they're going to steal my car. So, and then affection. I love them. Okay, so the real kids with the hydrocephalus, oh, they're so precious. They're so sweet. So I have a lot of affection for them. I think I would be that Dr. Crow, his wife, and just like love him.
The benevolent Dr. Crow.
Yeah, the good one, not the bad one.
Played by Hans Mikkelsen.
Oh, no.
He's officially Hans. That's all he can say. All right, now we can move on to somebody else that has better opinions than me.
Amanda, what do you think of Hans Mikkelsen?
Well, I don't know about him. I like Mads Mikkelsen a lot. I don't know. The believability on this is low, although I do believe there are people out in the woods that will get aggressive if you come near their territory. It might not necessarily be because they're a cannibal, but I think people see a lot of things when they want to see a lot of things and get scared by questionable things. I'm looking at you, Tony, and you, Debbie.
Debbie!
But do I believe that there are big-headed cannibal children from nuclear experiments and all that? No, no.
What about threat level? If they were real.
If they were real, they're pretty high.
Compared to other cryptids?
Yeah, they're high because they're trying to eat you. And they don't want you around them because, like I said, they're aggressive, they're territorial, and they're just angry because they don't have any real reason to be happy. They've been experimented on or their house burned down and they lost everybody they cared about. So, They need a Snickers, and yeah, I don't want to be around them.
What about affection? How much do you like the story of Melonhead?
I do kind of like it. It's got those tropes that, you know, they're supposed to freak you out a little bit. I think it's a good urban legend, and I think that's why it has endured in these different states that are very proud of it from the material that I've found.
Erica, believability?
All right, I'm going to preface this with saying that obviously I don't believe the legends as they stand. However, I do believe that there are encounters and experiences that can be very strange and have sources that we don't understand. And I think that those can be a part of spawning these legends and stories. So, as these stories are told, no, I don't believe them. But do I believe that strange things have happened with large-headed creatures in the woods? Maybe a little more so than the rest of you.
Okay.
By the way, she had time to write that down.
That's not what I was writing down.
I believe that you're very nosy, Joe.
I know it.
She sounds really good.
What about threat level?
I'm going to put it as high, maybe a 7 on the scale of the cryptids that I think that I've thought about. They hit me more on the level of a wild animal like a bear in the woods. You're going into something's territory. It's going to bite you. It's going to claw you. It's going to go after you. And I've been watching shows about animal attacks, so I know exactly how bad that situation can be. Yes. Yes.
So she was watching, I'm sorry, we have to talk about this, but she was watching this show. This animal attack show we were watching, and it was this lady getting attacked by a moose.
Very dangerous. Well. Very but dangerous.
All it was, it was like 10 minutes of her just moaning on the ground.
Uh-oh, the moose is coming back.
What was the moose doing to her?
Stepping on her.
Yeah. Stepped on her. Wow.
They're heavy.
They have sharp
and
hooves.
Strong.
I was like, what are you watching?
But bears are pretty scary as far as these things go. And for somebody like me who actually likes to hike out and likes to camp outside, unlike everybody else here, that's pretty terrifying.
Okay. How do you like this legend?
Oh, I love this legend, and I love a lot of it because of the really strong 50s vibe that comes mm-hmm. from it. I love mad science stories. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, pseudo-alien stories. I love all those elements, and they just kind of pour together here. Even before it gets into the really creepy, murderous parts, it has the sci-fi elements that I adore.
And that brings me to a question for Jess and Erica, since you guys were raised in Indiana. Have you heard of this before?
I had not.
Not named Melonheads.
What did you hear?
I've just heard stories about different encounters that were more of an alien nature in parts of southern Indiana. Mm-hmm. But they weren't classic gray alien stories either. Mm-hmm. So maybe sometime I'll get to tell this. Mm-hmm.
My first encounter with it, I think, was a creepypasta, like years and years ago.
Yeah. I'd never heard of it before. We decided to do an episode on it. For me, the believability is obviously nil. It's clearly one of those things that bored kids make up to scare themselves, to give themselves something to go look for. And even the various accounts are all generated by teenagers out looking for the thing that they're definitely going to find, whether it actually exists or not. Which is also the fun part of it. Threat level, these guys have something very few of the cryptids or legends we've talked about have, and that's numbers. There's a lot of them. There's like a tribe. They fight in a swarm. They've got organization. They've got tactics. They've got, you know, they move in groups.
So they're sort of like the creatures from The Descent.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, something like that.
But big brain.
Yeah. Not butt brain.
Maybe both.
So they represent more of a threat that way. And also they have this, Erica pointed it out, this intelligence factor that makes them extra scary to people. People don't like people more intelligent than them. That's why bullies go after the smart people, not vice versa. Mm. People are afraid of people who are smarter than them. And I like this for a lot of the same reasons that Erica said. It's got that weird old school sci-fi vibe, makes it a lot of fun to talk about. And I really like it because of all the dude bro stories of them stealing cars and chasing cars. And you can just tell who made these stories up.
What would be scariest to them?
Yeah, it was all these lunkheads, gearheads that just drive around in cars and they're looking for places to make out with their new girlfriends. And get them scared, so they'll hug up to them. And so they take them out to the old Felt house, the Felt mansion, or where the insane asylum burned down and the melon heads are out there. And they're going to see what they want to see, whether it's running 50 miles an hour next to their car, or whether it stole their car.
Breaking the law.
Definitely the first-hand accounts that actually exist were a lot of fun to read and made me laugh.
So, is that it?
I think that's it for the melon heads. Our little foray outside of the South was a lot of fun, actually, and we may do it a little more, to be honest, to get some of these very different types of stories, because this is not typical of the types of stories that we hear, which are more based in furry creatures of some sort or another.
Woolly bullies.
Yes.
Well, y'all, thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed it, and we had a real fun time with this one. And so next week, we're going back to one of our original horror stories written by Kevin, and we return to a character that has been featured in several, the Baptist. So he has a saga.
Yeah, we'll be dropping part 4 of the story in our next episode, and then part 5 will be coming on in a couple of months.
Alrighty. Well, y'all, that's all from us for tonight, and you take care. We're going to be back with another one for you real soon. Bye.
Bye.
Peace.
See ya.